You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out why there's a lot of room for improvement when it comes to health here in Wisconsin.
Right now, it's time for our weekly check-in on national politics. On this edition, changing attitudes toward Russia after accusations of hacking, a continued postmortem on the election outcomes in Wisconsin and elsewhere, and the final word from the Electoral College.
Harry Enten joins us now. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
The Electoral College met, voted this week, and no surprises, were there?
Well, unless you thought that Martin Sheen was going to have a major effect with his videos trying to convince electors to change their votes. No, there were no big surprises. Donald Trump is, at this point, going to be the president of the United States in a little less than a month.
Do you think, I mean, there was an effort by many, including Lawrence Lessig, who we talked to on the show, to try to persuade electors, Trump electors, to vote for someone other than Trump. Did anybody out there, as far as you could tell, really think that was going to happen?
Not anybody who, you know, was actually following the information. Perhaps some people who were dreaming thought it was going to happen. But, you know, they do these types of counts. You know, we've been following along, talking to electors, or people in the press have been, and there was just no real sign. And keep in mind, these are Republican electors. It's not like they're Democratic electors who then said that they were going to vote for Trump. These were Republican electors elected on Republican slates. So the idea that they weren't going to vote for the Republican nominee just struck me as foolish.
All told, how many electors did not vote for the candidate they were elected to vote for?
Well, this is the amazing thing, right? It ends up being seven, and in fact, the vast majority of those were people who said they were going to vote for Clinton, but then in fact voted for some other candidates. Bernie Sanders got a vote. Colin Powell got three in Washington. Faith Spotted Eagle, who is an American Indian, got one vote in the state of Washington. Only two Trump electors, both in the state of Texas, decided to go another direction. One cast their vote for John Kasich, who's still somehow around, and the other actually cast his vote for Ron Paul, who obviously is the former congressman from Texas.
That's election 2016. Well, let's get to Russia next and American attitudes to it, as intelligence agencies say Russian hackers aim to influence the election. A bipartisan group of senators wants an investigation. They say both parties should be on board. Senate Majority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell said he agrees.
I agree with Senator Schumer, Chairman McCain, Burr, and others. This simply cannot be a partisan issue.
So this shouldn't be a partisan issue, but you co-wrote a piece on maybe a growing partisan divide in how we think about Russia. What are you seeing?
Well, this is the amazing thing. If you go back through history, Russia has tended to be an issue where Republicans and Democrats agree how they feel about Russia, going all the way back to the eight times when it was the Soviet Union, all the way back since 1974. But in fact, what we have seen in the past few months is that Republicans are starting to see Russia more as an ally or a friend than Democrats are, which shouldn't be too surprising given that Donald Trump has obviously said some nice things about Russia and its leader Vladimir Putin. So this to me strikes me as yet another example of an issue that used to be bipartisan becoming simply put partisan, because elected officials, even though you do hear some Republicans obviously saying they want this joint investigation, Donald Trump has been is now the leader of the Republican Party, and he has been much more friendly towards Russia than we're used to Republicans being.
Do we see presidents being able to shape public, or president-elects in this case, being able to shape public opinion like this? People talked about Barack Obama when he spoke out on same-sex marriage. That may have had a big pull on public opinion. Is this something we see often?
Well, in fact, we do see it often, and we especially see it on the issue of Russia. Remember, Barack Obama, you know, he was going to come in and they were going to have new relations with Russia. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, back when she was Secretary of State, actually presented a physical reset button to Russia. And during that time, we saw Americans' opinions towards Russia grow more favorable. So it's definitely something that could happen. And at this point, it does seem, at least among Republicans, Trump being friendly towards Russia is, in fact, pushing more Republicans to like Russia.
But not necessarily Republicans in the U.S. Senate leading prominent committees. Names like John McCain, for example, not happy with this warming toward Russia. Are they going to be isolated among Republicans?
Well, I think that this is going to be an interesting sort of matchup between the U.S. Senate and President Trump. Obviously, John McCain was not a huge fan of Donald Trump during the presidential campaign, Donald Trump likewise wasn't really a big fan of John McCain. There are a number of senators, and we've sort of ranked them of who we think are the most and least likely to be friendly towards the Trump agenda. And there are a number of names like Lindsey Graham, John McCain, even Marco Rubio, who perhaps won't be as friendly towards Trump. It's going to be interesting to see how many end up in the Senate. Republicans are really allies of Trump, and whether or not Republicans nationwide start perhaps agreeing with Republican lawmakers in the Senate that maybe Trump is a little too friendly towards Russia and perhaps, you know, just not like him as much overall.
With this in mind, a Secretary of State appointee, Rex Tillerson, head of ExxonMobil, done a lot of business with Russia, won an award from Vladimir Putin, Order of Friendship with Russia. Is this Trump saying, hey, we're working with Russia, like it or not?
Yeah, I mean, this to me is sort of a very interesting thing that's going to be the first inclination as to whether or not Republican senators are going to really get aboard the Trump train. There's going to obviously be a vote on whether Rex Tillerson should be the Secretary of State or not. I'm not sure that Trump is going to really be able to get many Democrats, and there are only 52 Republicans in the Senate. So if he loses three Republican senators, that nomination is sunk. And it seems to me that they very well might get those votes. But again, Tillerson hasn't gone through the confirmation hearing yet, so we'll have to wait and see.
People are watching Donald Trump's favorability ratings. What has happened since the election, and where does he stack up compared to previous presidents-elect?
Well, he has seen his favorability rise. I'm not quite sure it could have really fallen much further than it was. And usually we do see when people are elected for a second term or become the president-elect that their favorabilities do rise. But keep in mind, more people still have an unfavorable view than favorable view of Donald Trump. It depends on the exact poll you're looking at. Sometimes the net favorability is somewhere minus 5. Sometimes it's closer to minus 15. I've even seen one that was minus 20. And in terms of history, that is by far, any of those numbers are by far the lowest net favorability rating for any incoming president. It's a good 15 to 20 points below what we're used to seeing, even on the lower end of the spectrum. So Donald Trump, despite winning the presidency and despite winning the president-elect, being the president-elect, is still very much unliked by most Americans.
What does that mean for how a president comes into office and governs? Or is this uncharted territory? We don't know.
Well, I mean, it is uncharted territory. We don't necessarily know when someone is this disliked. What we do know is that the net favorability ratings at this point in time do match up fairly well to how popular they are when they enter the office of the presidency, and does a pretty good job of understanding what the honeymoon period is going to look like. And if that's the case, then Donald Trump is maybe probably going to have more people like him than not like him once he's inaugurated, but by not by that big of a margin. And what does that mean? Well, that tends to perhaps suggest that members of Congress, we do know through political science research, that members of Congress are less likely to go along with the agenda of the President of the United States, especially on larger issues. And indeed, I think you kind of already see that with Russia and Rex Tillerson, where Republican senators are more likely and more open with their disagreements with the President. So if President Trump, or future to be President Trump, ends up being as unpopular as the numbers suggest he will be now, he may have a harder time passing his agenda.
Talking about the week in national politics with Harry Enten from 538. Harry, people still trying to figure out what happened on Election Day, a big post-election question close to home. Why did Trump win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania? And Democrats are really asking, how did Hillary Clinton lose Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania? You've written recently that there's some long-term trends at work here. It may not just be Hillary Clinton.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that there was an interesting thing going on with Donald Trump running a more populist campaign and Hillary Clinton perhaps being a less of a working class candidate than we're used to seeing among Democratic nominees for president. But it should be pointed out that President Obama's approval rating in the states, the Midwestern states that ended up being key, dropped significantly more than it did nationwide over the course of his second term in office. And even when it rose, I don't believe it rose as high in those Midwestern states as it did nationally speaking. That is, there was a trend towards the Midwestern states becoming more Republican-leaning even before Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump became the nominees of their party.
Also, we've seen in the last week a Politico piece looking at Michigan, a Daily Beast piece looking at all three states, talking to Democrats, some Bernie Sanders supporters, some local organizers saying, We were trying to sound the alarm to the Clinton campaign, to the team in Brooklyn, that we're going to be underperforming here. We're worried about turnout, the Democratic activists saying, and they didn't listen. Do you think there is something to that, that Hillary Clinton and her people should have heeded those warnings?
Well, I will say this much. You know, in Michigan, for instance, the final margin was about 10,000 votes. Yeah, anything could have happened that could have changed that margin. It's a very, very small margin. In the state of Wisconsin, for sure, Hillary Clinton should have campaigned there more instead of, say, campaigning in Iowa, where she ended up losing by nearly 10 percentage points. But let me offer you this. In the state of Pennsylvania, which was one of the critical states that Hillary Clinton lost by about the same margin she lost Wisconsin by in terms of percentage points, she visited that state a heck of a lot. She put a lot of money into that state on television ads, on internet ads, on radio ads, and she ended up losing it despite all of that effort. So to me, it's, you know, yes, she could have done better in Wisconsin and Michigan to get her message out, but the groundwork was laid long before this election that these states were going to be more competitive and more Republican-friendly than they had been in years past.
A couple other points I wanted to ask you about based on your Twitter feed. North Carolina, big things going on there. They have an incoming, they have a governor-elect from the Democratic Party. The Republican-led legislature and the outgoing Republican governor signed a law to limit the powers of the governor in that state. This has gotten a lot of outcry in North Carolina, some elsewhere. Is this something we should be paying attention to?
I think it should. You know, I think that there are a few things. Number one, it should be pointed out that there's a long history when governors are leaving office that they try and switch the power, how much power the actual governor has. So, you know, there's some normal political fighting that's going on. But we do know that, for instance, there are nonpartisan or supposedly nonpartisan election boards in the state of North Carolina that help run the election process there. And normally speaking, you have more members of the governor's party on those boards than not of the governor's party, and they've changed that a little bit. They've made it even. And usually the governor's party leads the election board in election years every even year. So, you know, when you'd expect Senate races or governor's races or presidential races. And the way that they've rewritten the rules is they've made it so that the non-governor's party leads those boards during election years, which is so ridiculous and is a complete, in my mind, a political play that is pretty much unprecedented. So I think you have both unprecedented and precedented things happening in the state of North Carolina, but there's certainly more than the normal political play that Republicans have been going at in that state.
Finally, Harry, you are politics and sports fans at 538. You were speculating on the political makeup of NFL cities, trying to figure out the reddest NFL city. What conclusion did you come to?
I believe that the reddest NFL season is probably the city of Jacksonville, which some helpful tweeter, we were able to figure out that Jacksonville barely went for Hillary Clinton this campaign, maybe by just about a few thousand votes. I think the other closest city was probably Green Bay up to the north. And although Brown County was won by Donald Trump, Green Bay itself was won by Hillary Clinton by about 3 percentage points. So Jacksonville is the reddest city that has an NFL team in it.
We'll leave it there for now, Harry. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst at 538.com.
Coming up after the news, we'll learn how healthy Wisconsin is by looking at the latest scores on the state's health report card. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.